people start talking about how to measure snow, and I just like, you know me, I'm not a numbers person. I'm like, somebody could be like, we got 45 inches of snow, and I'd be like, did you? Like, I like my sense of measurement with snow is like non-existent. I don't know.
I'm not spatial. I think that might
yeah,
be.
That's what it is. It's the spatial thing. It's not.
When people ask me how many people were in the room,
I don't know.
Are you kidding me? Like, I've learned the math of like sampling and then like, so I could, if you gave me some time and told me I needed to do it, I could figure out how many people were in a room, but I don't just look at a room and have any kind of sense.
Glad it's not just me. Welcome to this episode of Health in the 34th. We are doing this one remote because Kansas happens to be the coldest place and the snowiest place right now-ish.
That groundhog was not lying when he said there was going to be more winter. Oh my gosh.
I have a beef with that groundhog every year when he does not say the spring is coming. This is not my weather. But we're here and we're recording virtually. So if you hear a sound difference, it's because we're not in a studio. We are doing this virtually. But we thought this was very important. We've got a lot of things that we want to update people on that have been going on. So this, I'm tentatively calling this episode Get Caught Up. The Alliance has been busy. Let's talk about what we've been up to. Marissa, do you want to talk about our Love Thy Neighbor Day?
So our Love Thy Neighbor Day was February 4th. It was really, really great. We had a good turnout. So we did this event last year, and so we decided to do it again this year. And what we did was we brought a bunch of advocates to Topeka to visit the State House and deliver Valentines on Medicaid expansion with some little chocolates as well that Lacey made. They were super, super cute. And our advocates got the chance to, you know, come together and talk about what brings them to advocate for Medicaid expansion, why they feel it's important, and also be able to kind of have a reflection in the State House as well before they went and delivered their Valentine's. So it was a really successful event. We got a lot of excited people that were there, and it was great.
You know, one of the things that I thought was most exciting about Love Thy Neighbor Day is just the really earnest concern that people had in that group that visited. Many of them were not personally impacted by the coverage gap or the need for Medicaid expansion, except that they really had a deep concern for others in their community who did. And that was so encouraging to hear from Kansans who really care about people in their community having access to everything that they need. I think if we talked to most Kansans, they would say that that's something that's important to them. But I think that we all have so many competing priorities and different things going on that not many of us have the time or luxury to really think about that and put our time where our passion is. So being able to see a room full of people who were in that place where they are choosing to advocate for something that will help others. Wow, that was powerful and really inspiring to me.
I love that we had some students from the Kansas City area come down from a Jewish school, and those students were amazing. That one of the students got up and talked about what it meant. I think she even spoke some Hebrew. I thought that was so cool. I loved that.
I did too. And all I could think of was, would I have been able to articulate my thoughts that way when I was her age? And the answer is absolutely not. But I am so impressed by young people who already have such developed senses of who they are and what's important to them.
I love that event. It's always so uplifting. And it's fun to deliver Valentine's.
I really like this event because it's a faith-centered event, but we have, like Lacey was saying about the Jewish students that showed, we had so many different faith groups that were able to join us, and it was such a really exciting thing to have all these different faiths come together under one advocacy issue. So that was really cool for me.
And then I think the other thing we wanted to talk about was the call-in day that we had. And that was 2 days after Love Thy Neighbor. That was a busy week.
That was a busy week. So we have talked about this, I think, a little bit on the podcast, but there is a very serious threat to the Medicaid program at the federal level. So we have been hearing for a while that there would be attempts to cut the Medicaid program to be able to free up dollars to help pay for the continuation of income tax cuts that were first adopted during the first Trump administration. So, as that conversation has progressed, it seems more and more likely that Medicaid cuts are going to be on the table. So, we have been participating in a group of different organizations like ours across the country that are working to try to head off those potential Medicaid cuts, which we know will be very detrimental, not only to individuals in Kansas, but also to providers and communities. Because when we see anywhere near the type of cuts that have been suggested, I think on the House side, they've talked about cutting as much as a third of the Medicaid budget. And that would be really significant in its impact. And it would take away healthcare from a lot of Kansans. So we really need to make sure that policymakers understand what that impact would be and realize that it's something that is not just going to be a small issue. And it's not going to impact a small number of people.
So on our call-in day, we encouraged Kansans to make calls to the Kansas congressional delegation in Washington, D.C., and ask them to protect health care, particularly those who get their health insurance through Medicaid. We hosted a call-in hour, which I think was a new kind of event for us. I'm not sure we've ever done that before.
So, like one person had trouble like getting through, and so we were able to point them to the other resources that you had so that they could email or call the local offices. So there was a little bit of that. We had some people who stopped in first before they made their calls just to make sure that they were on the right track in terms of what to say. And then there was a group of our partners at Skill in Southeast Kansas that I think just were there the whole time with us, and they were on mute, but making their calls at that same time. So it was pretty cool.
And this is still ongoing. We like to say that the call-in day on February 6th was the beginning. We still have our webpage up with the contact information resources and the scripts and all of those things like that. And even the phone number is still the switchboard phone number that we used is still active. So the phone number that you can use is 1-866 426-2631. And I'll put that in the show notes to this episode too. They'll help you get connected to the right person. So we now have two Medicaid expansion bills in the Kansas legislature, one in the House and one in the Senate, and they are both called the Healthcare Access for Working Kansans Act or the HOWC Act. The House bill is HB 2375, and it is currently, as of this recording, assigned to the House Committee on Interstate Cooperation, which is chaired by Speaker of the House Dan Hawkins from Wichita. And Senate Bill 257, as of this recording, is assigned to the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee, which is chaired by Senator Beverly Gossage.
Yeah, so I don't think that's necessarily a good sign on either in either case that we are going to have an easy path to a hearing. Even last year, when there was a load of pressure, Senator Gossage was unwilling to have a bill hearing in her committee on the Medicaid expansion bill. And we ended up having an educational hearing that was a combination of the Ways and Means Committee and Public Health and Welfare. So we were at least able to have a public conversation about Medicaid expansion on the Senate side last year. But I think our chances of having her do an actual bill hearing in committee are pretty slim. So that just means to me that it's time for us to start asking. And both of those bills were introduced in exempt committees, so they don't need to follow the traditional deadlines in the legislature, which is a relief because we are already in the week of the deadline to get through the first house, the House of Introduction, which means that a lot of bills are going to die for the rest of the year or not be actionable after this week. So that does not apply to the Medicaid expansion bills, and we should make sure that we're asking our elected officials to try and get a hearing on expansion.
Yeah, they really are moving fast this year in the legislative session. Well, I guess the good news is, even though the struggle is real for these bills in their committees, that there has been quite a bit of chatter about Medicaid expansion on the floor of the Senate and the House. This year alone, we've had three votes of the House and or Senate on Medicaid expansion just in the last 7 or 8 days.
Yeah, that's
So
right.
in April, for the people listening, that I'm realizing now the way I said that, probably if you're not really familiar with how the legislature works, that could sound really confusing. Like, how can the bills be in a committee without a lot of hope of action, and yet we're still getting votes on the Senate or House floor? Can you kind of explain to people how that might happen?
Yeah, so I think we might, many of us remember from Saturday morning cartoons that the traditional process for a bill to become law is that it has a hearing and there's a chance for the bill to be discussed and debated in committee and changes to be made. And then the bill goes into the at full House or Senate, and then they have a chance to debate and vote on it, and then it switches sides. So that's the traditional pathway. That pathway has not been open to Medicaid expansion really for many, many, many years since 2017. We talk about the bill itself. The governor's bills are in the committees, but it's probably not likely that they're going to go through that traditional process. And that means that champions for Medicaid expansion in the legislature need to find creative ways to try and get that provision passed. And one of the ways that that is done is by adding an amendment to a bill that has an underlying purpose that would be similar enough to Medicaid expansion, that it would meet the requirements for amendments. We have seen three attempts in the last week and a half to add Medicaid expansion as an amendment to underlying bills. And so, in all of those cases, we did have votes that were recorded on the Medicaid expansion amendment. And those votes have been at least an interesting way for us to really understand where elected officials are on this issue. We have not been able to see that in many years because there has been an effort to prevent recorded votes about Medicaid expansion getting all the way through that process. There has not been a really clear vote like we've seen this year to understand where people across the two different legislative bodies stand on expansion. When you don't have a public two-sided conversation, what you end up with is a lot of power being given to the one-sided conversation that people might be getting through their personal contacts or the lobbyists that come and talk to them. So I think that it's all upside when we have these opportunities. I will say that neither one of them passed. The first time this happened, it was straight party lines. All of the Democrats voted for expansion. All of the Republicans voted against it. They had another opportunity to do that when there was an amendment placed on the budget. And in that case, we had almost a party line vote, except that there were some Republicans that passed or abstained from the vote. And there was one Republican, Representative Schreiber from Emporia, who voted yes on Medicaid expansion in the budget. So we know that Representative Schreiber has been a longtime supporter of expansion, and we're really grateful for his willingness to vote that way in with the amendment. On the Senate side, there were three Republicans that voted with in favor of Medicaid expansion. Those were Senator Brenda Dietrich, who is from Topeka, Senator Billinger, who is from Goodland, and Senator Argabright, who is from Olpe, which is in the Emporia area.
I know that in my time here at the Alliance, the number of times that we've gotten expansion to be openly debated on the floor has been limited. And in fact, I think I was here for more than a year before it happened the first time. And so for three of them, it is very exciting. I've seen people online who have said they all failed. Why are you excited about this? And I'm excited because one of our goals, you have big goals and then you have smaller goals, like in life, in everything, right? So we have this big goal of passing Medicaid expansion, but we also have smaller goals. And one of the intentional smaller goals that we've had recently is we're not going to let lawmakers refuse to talk about this anymore. When so many Kansans support something, it needs to be talked about. If they're going to fail to take action or pass it, they at least need to talk about why. And so we've really been intentional the last couple of years ask, why won't they talk about it? Ask them why they won't talk about it. So for them to talk about it three times in just over a week, that's a win in my book. And it will give us momentum and keep it going.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really good point. I think as soon as we give up and stop talking about it, then we guarantee that this will never happen.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the federal level with the caveat that it feels like it changes every day. So this is what's happening as of when we're recording this. And this is kind of a new area for us to dive into. Like we pay attention to the stuff going on in Washington, D.C., but we've largely as an organization been focused on state level. So we're going to do the best we can with this. April, do you want to give kind of an overview of this budget resolution process in Washington, D.C., and what that means for Medicaid?
Sure. So we have talked a lot about reconciliation when we talk about the federal policy changes that might be happening. And basically, the reconciliation process is a way for Congress to get around some of the really high bars that they have, particularly on the Senate side, in order to get legislation passed. So on the Senate side, they need to have 60 votes in order to pass legislation, typically. And if they use the reconciliation process, they just need to have a majority, so 51 votes, in order to pass the legislation. The reason that that is important is because there are several steps to this process once they decide that that's what they're going to use. And for those of us who are in states and used to state action, there's not really an equivalent. So for us, it's been a little bit of a learning curve to understand that. So the way that it works is if you're going to use the reconciliation process, you start with a budget resolution. And the budget resolution is basically, it's a bill that it comes out of the budget committees and identifies certain targets that they want to hit for either increased spending or decreased spending for different committees to come up with more specific recommendations. So step one is the budget resolution. Step two is those committee recommendations for the specifics of how those cuts or additions are going to be made. And then step three is putting it in a reconciliation bill and getting that bill passed through both the House and the Senate. So this is not at the point where we're talking about even saying specifically that they should be cutting that out of Medicaid, but we just know the committees that deal with Medicaid have this goal that they've been proposed that they'll cut this much out of budgets under their purview. The House Energy and Commerce Committee on the House side is the committee that works with the Medicaid budget. And they have been given a proposed budget resolution target of $880 billion. So we're talking about significantly larger cuts that they would be tasked with on the House side. So again, we are in the part of the process now where the budget resolution has been proposed, and then it still needs to be worked and made official by the House and by the Senate. So this is not set in stone quite yet, but we need to make sure that we are weighing in with elected officials, even at this stage in the game, because it will be easier to protect Medicaid now than it will be farther down the road when these proposed cuts have already been identified. The next part of the process, once these budget resolutions have been passed, will be for the committee work to happen where they identify specific cuts. That's where we would expect to see specific cuts potentially proposed to the Medicaid program. And then the third part would be for that reconciliation bill to actually be debated. So just so everyone's kind of on the same page, we are still kind of at the beginning part of the process, but we expect this process to go quickly. So the deadline for committees on the House side to report back with those proposed cuts is March 27th, but on the Senate side, it's even sooner, at March 7th. So we just all need to be ready to move quickly as we reach out to our delegation and say, Medicaid is really important. And if you enact cuts of this magnitude, we are going to see Kansans lose their coverage, their health coverage, and really negative consequences from that.
Yeah. And the people most likely to be affected by cuts to Medicaid would be like seniors in nursing homes, low-income children, people with disabilities, pregnant women, and very low-income parents. So those are the groups that we're talking about losing coverage. And
yeah, absolutely. Because in Kansas, remember, we don't have expansion. So the only people that are in our that are receiving their health care coverage from the Medicaid program are the people who you described, children, maybe very low income parents, pregnant people, and people who have a permanent disability. So when you look at that, those are definitely people that we don't want to lose their coverage. And then another big part of the Medicaid program is paying for seniors to be in nursing homes when they have run out of resources themselves. I know that that impacts pretty much everyone that I know in one way or another, either because they have aging parents or grandparents who are in that situation, or because they're concerned that that might be the situation that their loved ones, or neighbors or friends might be in, just because people are living a little bit longer and sometimes outliving their resources because things have become so much more expensive.
Yeah, I looked that up, and more than half of Kansans in nursing homes rely on Medicaid to pay for that care that they may not be able to find anywhere else.
Yeah, I think that there's some interesting data about nursing homes too. When you look at it, because it is so expensive and such a high level of care, really, people are not, for the most part, staying in nursing homes for long amounts of time. I think the average amount of time is about 18 months, but that means many people are actually there for less time. But when each month can cost over $10,000, there are many, many individuals who can't afford that. So even having the challenge of paying for 6 months in a nursing home can really be something that many families are not able to afford.
Some people might think that Medicare would pay for, but it is not. So, where many seniors, most seniors, I would say, probably get their health insurance through Medicare, there are things that Medicare does not cover, and that's where Medicaid comes in to help them get the care that they need.
And again, Medicaid is not paying for everybody in nursing homes.
Right.
It only kicks in when people have exhausted all of their personal resources. So, really, we're talking about people who are at the end of their lives and really do not have options for the type of around-the-clock care that they need.
And this is particularly important because Senator Roger Marshall from Kansas sits on these committees.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Senator Roger Marshall sits on a couple of the committees that will be part of this process with the budget resolution and making recommendations for cuts. We also know that Congressman Estes is a part of the House Ways and Means Committee, and so he will also play a role in terms of some of that decision making around cuts. So we do have Kansas congressional delegation members who are key, and that just means we have to be reaching out and talking to them about what the impact would be.
And just so everyone knows, you can reach out to both Kansas senators. This is something that I know once upon a time before I was in this work, I wasn't sure. I was like, do I have one senator? Which senator is mine? So, in case anybody else has the same question that I did, you have one representative, and both senators are people that you can reach out to. And you should, even if you are not in Representative Estes's district, and you have a different one. They're all very important to contact now early on. April, you had talked about two other federal bills, H.R. 1059 and S.447, which are about work requirements.
Yes. So this idea that there would be work requirements in the Medicaid program is one that has been around for a while. And in fact, work reporting requirements have been imposed on the Medicaid expansion population in some states in the past. Now, I will say that in the one state that was able to really impose the work reporting requirement, that was Arkansas, they had it up for about 6 months, and then the federal courts shut it down because 18,000 people lost their coverage in that first 6 months, and it was deemed to be contrary to the purpose of Medicaid covering people who were low income. And so I think when we talk about work reporting requirements, because that's really what it is, it's a new hoop that people need to jump through in order to participate and receive their healthcare coverage through the Medicaid program. This idea of encouraging people to work is very much an American value, a Midwestern value, a Kansas value. We all really believe that working is a good thing and it's something that provides a lot of purpose and fulfillment for people. And we want for people to be able to have those benefits as well as the pride that comes with self-sufficiency. However, already when we look at the population that receive Medicaid, we know that there are going to be certain people who are just not able to work because they have a permanent disability, because they are a child, because they are a senior who has gotten to the point in where their life where they actually need round-the-clock care and are not able to be in a work environment. And so when you look at who qualifies for Medicaid and you look at a work requirement, it doesn't really make sense because the people who might be receiving their health coverage from the Medicaid program are by and large already working if they are able to. And if they are not able to, they would most likely fall under an exception for the work reporting requirement. So really, I think of this as a paper tiger when it comes to actually invoking more people to work. But on the other hand, it does serve the purpose of taking away people's coverage if they can't jump through all of the administrative hoops that they need. So that's not to say that the person's not working, it's to say that they are scrambling every single day to work, to get food on the table, to problem solve the many difficult scenarios that people who are in this income range often face. And they don't necessarily have the time or bandwidth to be constantly proving that they are working a certain number of hours. And also, the types of jobs that put people in this income range. So, some of those frontline, like a retail worker or a server in a restaurant, they don't necessarily control the number of hours that they work any given week. So, they might have a job, they might be on the schedule, but if they are not scheduled the expected number of hours, they don't necessarily have the opportunity to increase those hours. So we're again putting someone in a position where if they don't, like let's say the business is slow and they get let out of work early, or if they don't get scheduled, then not only do they not get paid for that time, they also lose their insurance, which is a huge double whammy. And it ends up with workers who are not as healthy and not as able to be on the job. So it's kind of a vicious cycle when you look at the relationship between work and healthcare and requiring work in order to get healthcare, when honestly, it's probably a little bit more beneficial to do it the other way around, provide the healthcare, and then people will be able to work.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've touched on this before, and have kind of acknowledged that the extension of the enhanced advanced premium tax credits that are related to the marketplace are unlikely to be extended. But I wanted to take this time to reaffirm the importance of them. So those Since COVID, people who get their health insurance through the marketplace have had the opportunity to have enhanced tax credits. So those tax credits that help people pay for that health insurance, Those have been enhanced for the last couple of years, and those are set to expire at the end of 2025. So if they wanted to renew those in Congress, they would need to be doing that now. We know that's unlikely to happen based on everything else that's going on, but it is critically important. 93% of Kansans who get their health insurance on the marketplace are using those enhanced tax credits. And so if and when those expire, nearly all Kansans on the marketplace will see their costs increase.
Yeah, I think that it's important to note that as Congress is looking for ways to cut funding so that they can use that funding, shift it over to the income tax cuts, they have even talked about taking away those tax subsidies from middle income people who are getting their coverage through the marketplace. That would be a huge blow to a lot of people who are in that situation here in Kansas.
During the last Trump administration, there was the big push to repeal and replace the ACA. Not so much thinking that that will happen this time around, but this is an example of one of those little things that they can change or take away that will make a big impact on everyday Kansans. And then I wanted to mention one other thing. Recently, the United States Health and Human Services announced that they were going to cut funding for the Navigator program by 90%. So 90%. Navigators are really important. They are unbiased people just like us, just everyday Kansans that do this work. They are trained in all sorts of different health insurance options. So they have training on Medicaid. They have training on the marketplace. I think they even have training on Medicare. And they are somebody that a person can go to get unbiased advice on how they can access health insurance. During the first Trump administration, the funding for this program was cut by 84%, and then it was reinstated, restored by the Biden administration, but they have announced that they're going to cut this again. And so I just wanted to point that out. Navigators do really good work, and will be obviously a 90% cut to any program is going to massively hurt that program. So this was something I feel like kind of flew under the radar and maybe not a lot of people had heard. And so was important to talk about, I think. Marissa, I know you have been spending time looking at what's going on with expansion, Medicaid expansion in other states. Do you want to kind of tell us an abbreviated version of what you found in those states?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple states have expansion, and they've been looking to make ways to reform their Medicaid expansion program. I'm using reform in air quotes because if the reform doesn't go through the way that they want it to, Medicaid expansion could be repealed entirely. So it's kind of like a little roundabout way to get rid of expansion that we've been seeing in a couple other states. But in Idaho, there was a House bill that was introduced by Representative Redman. He introduced this last year in the House Health and Welfare Committee, and he did it again this year. The bill has a lot of requirements that he wants to enact on the Medicaid expansion program, like work requirements, cap expansion at only 50,000 people being able to be on it, and would also ban people that are on expansion from being eligible for those benefits after they've been on it for 3 years. So lots of things that they're wanting to do there. The bill did have a hearing, I think within the last week or so, and it did pass out of committee, if I remember correctly. But over 300 people did testify in opposition to this hearing, with only 17 people testifying in support. So there is widespread opposition to this bill, and we will see what happens in the next coming weeks with that legislation.
Can I quote Toy Story here? This is indicative of what's on my TV at my house. There's a line in one of the, I don't remember which Toy Story, where they go, "Way to go, Idaho." And he's talking to the potato, Mr. Potato Head. They go, "Way to go, I." That's what I have to say to those 300 people. Way to go, Idaho.
Absolutely. And then in Montana, a little bit better news coming out of Montana. The House has passed House Bill 245, which would remove the sunset date of June 30th of this year, continue funding for Medicaid expansion. That passed with 63 people voting in favor and 37 voting in opposition. And then also, there was a bill in the Senate in Montana, Senate Bill 62, that was actually a phase out bill for Medicaid expansion that failed to pass the Senate. So looking pretty good in Montana. I think Medicaid expansion is going to be sticking around for a little bit longer, which is good to see.
Yay.
And then in South Dakota, there's a couple of things that are happening there that are around ballot initiatives. They are wanting to increase the voter threshold for constitutional amendments. They would need at least 60% of the vote. And there's also another resolution that would allow a Medicaid expansion trigger law, which several states already have in effect. So basically, South Dakota is saying if the match rate, which is set at 90% to 10% for Medicaid expansion, if that were to ever drop, that Medicaid expansion would cease to exist in South Dakota. These ballot initiatives have not passed out just yet, but if they do pass, they go to the voters in 2026. And then I think one of you guys already mentioned this, but Arkansas is seeking the Arkansas governor is seeking work requirements again this year. We'll see how far those go. And then in Ohio, there has been a budget proposal from the governor who has wanting to make it mandatory to end Medicaid expansion if the federal match does reduce in any way. So the governor is also calling for work requirements. Haven't seen any further movement from that, but there are those things happening there.
South Dakota gets a lot of ballot time. They vote on a lot there. I'm just impressed because we don't have that in Kansas, so.
I think the bottom line is, it's really interesting to me when we hear these national opposition groups say once you pass Medicaid expansion, you can never go back. And yet, they definitely realize that you can go back because they're doing this work in other states to try
Exactly.
and undo their expansions. So the fact that these initiatives are underway in some other states across the country is not surprising to me at all because they are trying their hardest to try to get that undone. But so far, they have not been successful, and it doesn't sound like anything is a sure thing this year either.
I would agree with that. They in most of these states, they have a long way to go, just like we do here, but they do have a long way to go. So.
When I was watching the Senate debate on Medicaid expansion yesterday, and Senate President Ty Masterson is an opponent of expansion, and he was talking about that and talked about how, well, I don't remember the phrase he used, something about a horse out of the barn or something. And April, I had the same thought that you did of no state has gone backward despite some people trying. And so the comment of the horse, once the horse gets out of the barn, is like, it's because people are looking at it and they're seeing the benefits and that there would be harm done to the state if they went backwards. So it certainly isn't like once you do it, then nobody ever talks about it again. And then it just is allowed to do whatever, run rampant or whatever. States are looking at it and they are determining that it's best to keep it actively right now. And so I just wanted to point that out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. This is not a situation where once you do it, you can never go back. This is a situation where once states have done it, they have not wanted to go back. And so that's a very different proposition than the way it's being framed.
Yeah, and we're talking about Idaho, Montana, South Dakota, Arkansas. We are talking about states that are historically on the more conservative end. They're like Kansas in many ways.
They are our fellow red states for
Yeah.
sure. Uh-huh.
Thanks for doing all that, Marissa. It's a lot to keep track of here in just in Kansas, so for you to keep track of what's going on in other states too is impressive. So we will definitely keep everybody, informed.
So we are having our yearly Medicaid expansion rally on March 12th this year at 12:30 in the State House at Topeka. So if you are able to join us, we would love to have you. Really looking forward to that day.
And we also have some help with transportation. There's a bus that's going to be starting in Wichita and can pick you up if you go onto our website and reserve your spot. There's also going to be a bus that's coming from the Kansas City area. It might be stopping in some other places, although we don't have all of that ironed out yet. But certainly, if you are in Kansas City, Kansas, you might really think about that bus. And we will be providing boxed lunches for people who ride the buses, just knowing that you won't really have a lot of time to find lunch otherwise once you get to Topeka. So we want to make this as easy as possible for you if you have an interest in coming and being a part of that rally.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we hope to see everybody on March 12th, 12:30, second floor of the Kansas State House here in Topeka. Other than that, be sure that you are staying connected with us. If you are not on our email list, be sure to go to expandcancare.com. On our homepage, there is a box to make sure you're on our email list. When there are votes and things, we send out emails. Letting everybody know that way. So that's a great way to stay in real time informed of what's going on. Of course, we are on social media. You can find us at Expand Can Care is our handle everywhere that we are. And we hope everybody stays warm and dry. And if you are like April and you love the snow, I hope you are loving it. If you are like me and dreaming of summertime, hang in there. We'll get there. And otherwise, we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.
Health in the 34th is a podcast from the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas. We hope you'll take a moment to subscribe and share our podcast with others. Episodes written and produced by Marissa Alcatar and Lacey Kennett. Episodes available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Join the movement and get involved. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. For more information on the Alliance for Healthy Kansas, visit us at expandcancare.com.
Nobody else does that. Like, you watch a cleaning video while you clean, and it makes you feel like you're not alone. No? Just me? Okay.